This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
And we welcome you to this edition of Tuesday People, the podcast. I'm your host, Mitch Albom, author of the book Tuesdays with Maury, which is celebrating its 25th year now in publication. And this Sunday, there'll be a very special segment on the CBS Sunday Morning. And Ted Koppel reported it, and he and I did an interview commemorating the 25 years. And of course, Ted Koppel is the reason indirectly that I got back together with my old professor, Maury Schwartz, because if I had not seen him on the Nightline program, which Ted Koppel hosted back then I never would have known that he was dying from Lou Gehrig's disease, never would have gone to visit him the first time, let alone all the times that followed. And so I owe a great deal to Ted. And when the 25th anniversary came around and we wanted to do a sort of feature piece in the media, it just seemed like the logical place to do it was with Ted, who is now working for CBS Sunday Morning. And so
yes.
I have a nice relationship with them anyhow. And so called him up and we put it together, and the result will be this Sunday. I haven't seen it or anything, but I trust that in Ted's hands, it'll be something memorable. And so watch that this Sunday. I don't know what time it's on in your local markets, but I know it's on CBS because it's called CBS Morning.
And you know it's on in the morning.
Yeah, I know it's on in the morning. I don't think it's an evening show. So
because it says CBS Sunday Morning. But by the way, that's my favorite show on TV.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people say that it's their favorite show. Jane Pauley does a wonderful job. She's a friend of mine. And Nancy Giles also reports there. She's been down to Haiti several times, and friends of ours. So it's a good program. It's a good place to do it. And hopefully they'll include some of the good segments of Maury and me talking, just as you'll hear every week here on Tuesday People, where you use the segments from our tape vault of Maury and the conversations that we have with him when it's appropriate to talk about it. And I want to share something today that probably at first blush is going to sound a little odd given the segments that we normally do here. And I was negligent in not introducing you, Lisa. Sorry, Lisa Goetsch, my producer, good friend who's here and whose voice that you're hearing in the background laughing along with me. So
hopefully people know by now, right? It's 140. We're 143 episodes in, maybe.
Yeah. I would think by this point, I would think most people kind of know who you are.
But I'm superstitious. Yeah. I like when you introduce me. In fact, I don't even like to talk until I hear my introduction. But sometimes I have to interject just like I did, because I was like, ooh, CBS Sunday Morning, that's my favorite show. So I have to sometimes talk. But sometimes if you see me just not saying anything, I feel like I haven't been welcomed yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm superstitious. Mm-hmm. And I like when you say my friend. That always makes me happy.
Well, you know that you're welcome. And so what's going to sound a little strange is that today's episode is going to be about food.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, you might say, well, what does food have to do with anything having to do with what's really important in life once you know you're going to die, like Maury did? Well, I can tell you that this came to me because I went and saw the play of Tuesdays with Maury, which was something that I wrote 20 years ago. Obviously, I've seen it before, but it's doing a run here in Michigan. And I had a chance to go sit in the back and watch it. And I was reminded in the play, a big running theme is the food that I would bring Maury when I would come visit him. Now, I've talked about food and Maury in the past in some of my explanations about when we first got to know one another, when I was getting to know Maury in college and spending time with him in college, after classes and office hours, one time he said, why don't you meet me in the cafeteria? We'll have lunch. And so we sat down and we ate, and Maury had an egg salad sandwich. And he was talking to me with such enthusiasm about, you know, the things for my future. Don't worry about your grades, and don't be like the pre-med students so worried about, you know, competition for grades, or the pre-law students and how much money they're going to make. And, you know, follow your heart, follow your dreams. You know, all these wonderful big advice, but sometimes he would forget to chew. And I would be sitting across from him, and little yellow projectiles would come flying out of his mouth. And, you know, I felt like a hockey goalie, like I had to kind of swat them away so that they wouldn't hit me in the face. And this became a sort of beloved quirk of Maury's that I always noticed. And I wrote about it in Tuesdays with Maury, that he wasn't a slob. He was just too full of life to chew. Too enthused.
Who needs chewing, really?
Yeah,
who needs
it? It would be so much easier if we could just inhale it. And he was kind of like that. And it became this favorite thing of ours. So when I first went to visit Maury, the very first time after I discovered that he had ALS, the first thing he said when he greeted me in his wheelchair, which was outside on the curb, he said, come in, we'll eat something. So the very first time that I visited with him, we sat down and we ate. Now, at that point, he was already limited in his ability to eat certain foods. He couldn't obviously chew on like a steak or things like that. But even softer foods, he was having a hard time with. And I watched him try to cut up a tomato and try to put it in his mouth. And it was such a labored attempt, you know, try to lift it up, and his hand was shaking, and lift it up again, his hand was shaking, and it fell off his fork, and he put it back in his mouth. And I think that act, Lisa, just kind of really brought it home to me for the very first time how sick he was and how limited he was. You know, you see people in wheelchairs, all right, you relate it to accidents, injuries, and, you know, you hear people breathing hard, you relate that to asthma or other things. But when you're sitting really close to somebody and you're just watching them struggle with such a simple act of eating, I don't know, for me, it just really brought it home. And yet he loved to eat. And because it was the first thing that we did, when I came back the next week, I rented a car, and I had noticed that the food that he had on the table was from this deli or a co-op or something like that called Bread and Circus. It was a big kind of food place, you know, a food emporium, for want of a better word. So it wasn't far from where he lived. And so I found it on a map, no GPS back then. And I drove there and got a couple things that I knew he'd like egg salad and things like that. Well, when I came in and I walked in and I said, I got you something, you know, what did you get? I guess I got food. Oh, you know, I love that. Oh, this is great. He was so happy.
Yeah.
That even though we ate a little bit of it, but you know, even though it was a big thing, I said, well, I know this makes him happy. And so it started to become a thing with us.
Yeah.
And every Tuesday I would bring him food. And we even had a little, you know, discussions about it. What'd you bring and what'd you get, et cetera, et cetera. Here's one that I just found on one of the tapes. Listen.
I bought you a ton of food. I bought you so much food now that Charlotte actually got a little upset with me. She said, you got to stop bringing this much food because we don't have enough room in the refrigerator for it. She said, nobody's eating it.
It's true.
But I bought you some soup and some baba ganoush and some hummus and some soft stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Some easy stuff to get down.
Right.
So, you know. Right, I know you're into the puree. You're into the purees, you know.
Right. So. It's hard and hard. Eat the solid food. Because I'm not swallowing as well. So, I eat a lot of soups, which help in terms of not too much smaller.
But are they limiting you in terms of type of food that you can eat, like spicier or meat or?
I can't eat spicy.
Or digestible or anything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, I know what my limits are anyway. Mm. That's what I'm limited to.
You get a hankering every now and then for a certain type of food that you haven't had in a while.
Yeah.
Like what?
Tongue.
Tongue? Oh my God. Oh my God, I can't believe it. That's what you get. Oh. I hate that food. I can eat anything. That's disgusting.
Well, I'm sorry.
That's what you get a hankering for? Why don't you say like a pecan pie or something like that?
I have a hankering for that.
God, tongue. You didn't just think that up as a joke, did you? Oh, I'm nauseous now. You're making me sick.
How about knishes?
Knishes, well, all right, knishes.
You think that, all right?
How about just some noodle cocoa? Can you still eat noodle
cocoa?
Yeah,
but that has cheese in it.
Cheese isn't good?
Makes phlegm.
Cheese makes phlegm?
I can't make phlegm.
I didn't know that. Cheese makes phlegm.
Yeah, that's all right. Other people eat. You know what? I'm going to have to go to the commode.
Oh, really?
In the midst of all this.
All this excitement is driving you, driving you right to the bathroom.
Right.
So,
tongue.
That's it.
Ah. Yeah. My mom tongue. Used to eat that. Ah.
That is something from a generations ago. I don't know anybody my age or younger who eats tongue.
No.
But just lest anybody think that all of our conversations involved in Tuesdays with Maury were somehow meaningful, deep, you know, got to talk about the most important things in life. There is proof positive that there was plenty of time spent talking about other things like food and phlegm.
Yeah, but that's important in life.
Yeah, it is. Important. Well, yeah, I guess so. But we weren't talking about its importance. We were just talking about it. And of the many quotes that people have pulled from Tuesdays with Maury, cheese makes phlegm is not going to be one of them.
No, but that should be a new one. I think we should. Too bad you already talked to Ted Koppel. You could have brought that up.
Yeah, could have been that. Cheese makes phlegm. Yeah, okay. And then he was so excited he had to go to the bathroom.
We'll be back with more Tuesday People right after this.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
So the food thing continued to be a kind of thing between us. And no matter what the weather, And however bad it got, as the winter kind of dawned and it would get these, you know, very cold and windy, and it didn't stop me from going to Bread and Circus and picking up food. However, you know, every time I would come in with the food, you know, it would be mid-morning. It wasn't really time to eat. And Maury would say, oh, thank you so much for bringing me the food. Just put it in the kitchen and Charlotte will take care of it. So I would. And then one time, probably, you know, in the fall, down to the last 4 or 5 weeks of the time that Maury and I had together, I had to go into the kitchen for something. I don't know what I was looking for. And I opened the freezer for some reason. And there in the freezer was all the food that I had been bringing Maury for week after week after week. Yeah.
No.
And I came back out and I said, I just opened the freezer. And he said, yeah. And I think he realized what I was going to say. And I said, all the food that I've been bringing you every week, it's just sitting in there in the freezer. He says, I know, I haven't been able to eat it for weeks and months. And I said, why didn't you tell me? And he said, because you got such joy out of bringing it. I didn't have the heart to tell you that I couldn't eat it. And I said, but I only bought it because I thought you were eating it. And in the play, we wrote this into the play. And, you know, when I say that and he says that and I say that and Maury says, well, this is a real O. Henry story, isn't it?
Oh.
You know, because like I'll give you a braid for your hair and I'll give you my hair so I can get that kind of thing. And it turned into such a beautiful moment about good intentions and people just trying to do nice things for one another, that I ended up putting it in the book and putting it in the play. And I realized as I watched that scene that food is a great equalizer for getting people to sort of relax into the important conversations about life.
Oh, yes.
I always found it hard. For example, I've gone to some therapy in my life, not a lot, but a few different times in my life, I've sat down with a therapist, and I always find it hard to get started because it feels like you're diving into a pool with your clothes on, you know, and start swimming, that kind of thing. You sit down, so how you doing, you know, and I always would make so much small talk when I would go to any therapy because I was warming up basically. I was like, so how do you warm up for therapy? You talk. I mean, it's not like you go da 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 da. It's not like there are exercises for therapy. So what's the right way to warm up for therapy? You basically talk about smaller things so that you can get up to the big things. And I would kind of almost have a clock in my head. I don't know if you do this too, Lisa. As I was going on, like, all right, you know, have I talked long enough that it seems appropriate to, you know, begin to talk about what I'm actually here for?
Oh, you know what I do mean? You know how I do it? I'm like, oh crap, I just talked for 3 minutes. That's like $42. I better get on to my problems now.
Oh, okay.
I busted up into dollars.
You look at it economically. Okay.
Yes, yeah. I look at the economics of the chat. I'm always like, hey, Helen, how are you doing? Great. How's kids? Good, good. Kids are good, good. She's like, how's Teddy? Good. Anything? And then I'm like, okay, now it's time. We just reached about $40. Let's move on.
Well, I didn't quite look at it by the dollar thing. I just sort of went by feel, and it did take some time before I felt that it was okay to kind of talk about it. And I think food between people, now don't label me trivial here. I'm being serious. I think food between people is a very good way to break down a lot of the barriers that people have about talking about important things.
It's true.
You know, it's a relaxer. There's a reason that, you know, Native Americans would have meals and festivities when things were going on and were important. There's a reason that Eastern European families, you know, most of the big important stuff is always done around big meals. You know, Italians have big long meals and things get discussed. The dinner table, at least in my upbringing, the dinner table was where everything got discussed. And of course, you started with the food, and sometimes you would just sit there eating dessert forever or munching you know, extra cookies, or as you got older, coffee or whatever. What do people say when they want to talk about, come on, we'll have a cup of coffee, we'll talk about
it.
Yes. There's always something sort of involved. Well, it's a lubricant of sorts. It's a, for conversation, it makes people relaxed and kind of reminds you of this shared humanity. I got to eat, you got to eat. I always find it easier to talk to somebody who's new to me when they start eating. It's like, okay, I'm watching them chew. You know, sometimes they chew a little funny or something like that. You know, they talk with their mouth open a little and say, okay, we're all human. You know, oh, he's got a little crumb on his mustache there. You know, we're all human. We're normal like that. And so food was like that for me and Maury. And I think food can be like that for you and in the walks of life that you have. I think of several different examples that come to mind in my life just recently. When I'm in Haiti and I'm with the kids, we have these sessions where they're like the young gentlemen's club or the young ladies club or whatever, where, you know, kind of budding teenagers, 14, 15, 16, they start. And we meet and we just talk about the issues of, you know, impending adulthood, whatever that may be, you know, the opposite sex or, you know, college or responsibility or adolescence or, you know, puberty and, you know, the physical things that come with it, the emotional things that come with it, all that. And every time we used to just start and sit down and talk, and I noticed that, you know, it took a long time for the kids to kind of warm up to the idea or whatever. So I started bringing out these big jars of nuts, you know, mixed nuts that we would keep down there, we'd bring down. And I just would put a little cup of it and start passing them around, and the kids would start eating while they were talking. And suddenly, the conversation flowed much more smoothly. You know, there's something about like...
just over nuts. How about that?
Yeah. There's something about starting a sentence and putting something in your mouth. So anyhow, you know, like that, it just relaxes you. And it subliminally says to the other person, I'm eating, you're eating. I'm a person, you're a person. We both have to eat. Now let's, you know, find other common ground.
Yeah, it's a little comfort too. You know what I mean? It just puts you in a comfortable space.
The second example is something that we did here in Detroit with the charities that we run here in Detroit. This was right after the summer of George Floyd, and the police and citizens were at tenderhooks. And especially here in Detroit, you know, this big police presence. There are a lot of people who have been incarcerated, and certainly a large African-American population, although we also have a huge African-American police force. And I came up with this idea, and I have to say, I thought maybe it was silly at the time, but I had been invited to a thing once where it was in New York, and they were inviting people to attend like this dinner, but you couldn't say who you were. You had to attend the dinner, and nobody knew who anybody else was, and you couldn't talk about what you did, but all you did was prepare the food, and then you ate together. And then after you ate, people tried to sort of guess, you know, what it is that you did or something like that. And in the end, you sort of found out who everybody was. And I never went, but I always remembered that. That's kind of an interesting
idea.
That
would have been fun.
Yeah, I'm not. You're more into evenings with strangers than I am. But I thought I got some people together, and we had this guy who we work with. His name is Darryl Woods. And he's a fantastic guy. And he was incarcerated for decades for a crime that he did not ultimately commit. And when his sentence was commuted, after they finally realized he'd been committed, instead of being bitter, he came out and he started working with, you know, people out in the community and ex-cons and youth and everything, you know, doing everything right, doing everything, taking the terrible thing that happened to him and turning it into a positive. And I said to him, what if we get people together, police and like kids, at-risk kids or former incarcerated people, but we don't tell them who's who. And we just invite them to a barbecue and they cook the food themselves. And then at the end, they can introduce themselves. And he said, I think we can make that work. And we did it for the first time. And it was really something to watch because we had this big grill out in the middle of the street. And this guy that we work with, Jack Aronson, was fantastic, bought all these meats and everything to grill. And it was just a crazy, good, crazy good barbecue, yeah. And everybody was cooking up, and you know, a lot of these guys were the same age, and you know, they were 20s, 30s, 40s, you know, and they were cooking, they're making jokes with one another, and nobody really asked any questions because it was kind of a free meal, you know. So
yeah,
and it was good meat. So finally, at the end, Daryl stands up and he says, "Okay, let's go around the table and just kind of say who we are and where we are." And he started deliberately with the guys who were, you know, had been in jail, and he said, "Well, I'm my name's Joe. I'll say, you know, and I've been out in the street for a little while. I was inside, as they say, inside, you know, code word. I was inside for a bit. But I'm trying to get my life together and this that." Another guy. And then finally they came to the police, who looked just like, you know, the people who were sitting at the table. Everybody relaxed. "What do you do?" And the guy stood up. He said, "Well, I work for the city." I said, "Oh, really? What do you do for the city?" And he said, "I'm a cop." And if you
look, what are the guys?
Well, there were a couple guys just like popped up as if they were going to go. And Dale said, no, sit down. And it turned out to be the greatest. We had like a 2-hour bull session. And everybody was sharing their thoughts. And by the end, guys were hugging and exchanging phone numbers. A lot of the kids and the former gang members, whatever, said, "I never had a policeman's cell phone number, ever. I've never had it." And they were giving out, "Hey, if there's ever anything wrong, call me. And it was all because they broke bread together. That's what, if we were trying to force that conversation, it never would have happened. So I realized that breaking bread and sharing food is a great way to break down your problems and get the things. So if you've got somebody you want to talk to, if you've got somebody in your life that you got an issue with, or something that's going on between you or a family member or a loved one, a friend, even an office worker, you could do worse than put some food between you. Ask what they like, ask what kind of they like to drink, and find some place where it's comfortable, where you got a nice setting, and start to share food before you talk. Like Maury and I would do the sandwiches before we talked, or get the food out before we talked. And then you get to the serious stuff and the meaty stuff. After the meat, the meaty stuff.
After the meat, the meaty stuff.
After the meat, the meaty stuff. So that's my little piece of advice for today. Food, glorious food. There's a part in the play where when Maury asks me to come and visit him at his grave, and he says, "Bring a blanket, bring some sandwiches and some food." And in the play, my character says, "Wait a minute, you want me to have a picnic at your tombstone?" And Maury says, "Well, you always bring food." And Mitch says, "You never eat it." And Maury says, "Well, I won't eat it. I won't eat it then either."
That's true.
And it's a very funny line at a very key moment in the play. And so
that's great.
You know, I just find that food can be a great equalizer. So try it. Next time you got a problem, something to share with somebody, put a little food between you and see if it makes a difference. We hope you enjoyed this week's conversation. We do this every Tuesday. If you like what you hear, WeTuesdayPeople.com on the web, and you can find out more about us and previous shows and chats, things like that. Until we see you again, on behalf of my good friend Lisa Goich, who produces this program, I'm Mitch Albom saying, see you next Tuesday.
Thank you for listening to Tuesday People. To be part of our conversation, join the Tuesday People community at WeTuesdayPeople.com. Subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss an episode and share it with your friends. We look forward to having you with us every Tuesday because, after all, we're Tuesday People.